Good morning, everybody. The learning at the OU Israel Center today, Tuesday, March 12th, 2019, the 5th of Adar is in memory of Reb David ben Menachem Monish, Zichrono Levracha. Okay. I've given this shiur a title. I don't think it'll be the final title. We'll see about that later. Is silence golden? At my in the yearbook of my elementary school graduation from Yeshiva Torah V'Dat in 19 something or other, I think it was 1948. Under my picture, it said, "Silence is golden." My wife never believed it. She knows me as a noisy, loud fellow. But I told her that when I was a little boy, I was reserved, I was shy, I was slightly introverted, I was very quiet. She never believed a word that I said. But is silence golden? So I'm going to take you to a medrash on Megillat Esther. Number one, Ein Esther Magedet Moladita. Mordechai has commanded Esther not to reveal her family, her people, where she was born. This is the great mystery. Here, Ahasuerus finally chooses a wife from all of the damsels and maidens that he has collected from the entire kingdom, and the one he gets, no tudat zehut, nothing. Ein Esther Magedet Moladata. Esther does not tell where she was born. Melamed, shetofsa shtika ba'atzme k'rachel ziknata. From here we learn that she held on to silence, just like her grandmother Rachel. Her grandmother Rachel permits her sister to go to the chuppah in her stead and remains absolutely silent. Her great-granddaughter Esther follows in that tradition. Shetofsa pelech shtika. She held on to the staff of silence. Amdu kol gedolei zara b'shtika. All the great children who came from Rachel followed in her footsteps, and they had silence. Rachel tofsa pelech shtika. Rachel is the one who held on to this virtue of silence. She saw all of her wedding gifts by her sister. Vishatka, she remained silent. Binyamin binotafas bishtika. Oh, this is so beautiful. Her son Binyamin also, for him, silence was a virtue. Teda, you should know, Shavno Shaita Bachoshen Haita Yoshpe. The stone in the gem, the diamond in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, which represented the tribe of Binyamin, was Yoshpe. Name of some kind of a gem. And what does Yoshpe mean? Lomar? Yodeya Hoyo B'Mechidat Yosef. The show take. He knew about what his brothers had done, that they had sold his brother Yosef. And remained silent. Yoshpe stands Yeshpe. He has a mouth, but he doesn't use it. Loma, Yodea Hoyo b'mechidat Yosef, he knew about the sale of Yosef, the show take. Yoshpe, Yeshpe, he has a mouth, the show take. Shol ben bena. Shaul, an oinekel of Rachel, after he goes out to look for the donkeys that ran away from his father, he ends up coming to Mitzpah, the city of Shmuel, and Shmuel there anoints him to be the king of Israel, the first king of Israel. When he comes home, his uncle asks him, what happened on the trips? He said, well, we went looking for the donkeys. V'dvar ha-melucha lo higidlo. He didn't tell his uncle the fact that he had been anointed king. Can you? That's the biggest news you can bring home. Uncle Tyre, I'm the king. Not a word, not a word. Esther, and Esther follows, Ein Esther magedet moladeta v'etama. Esther does not tell her birthplace and her people. Okay? So here it is. We have a silence is golden. This is the silence of Esther, the silence of Rachel, silence of Binyamin. By the way, there's somebody else who remains silent. Yosef. The great question that everybody asks, why didn't Yosef send a letter home? Abrivale de Tata? Only those of you who are in my age bracket would understand there was a powerful song, Abrivale de Mama. Here it is, Abrivale, send a letter. Let her home to his father. He remains silent. And we said a number of shurim on that. Yosef didn't know what was going on in the house. He did not know whether a letter that he would send home would be greeted with great joy or it would cause the house to simply explode. And Yosef had learned, because he spoke too much, he caused the beginnings of all of the strife. So Yosef remains silent. So we have it now, Rachel, Yosef, Binyamin, Shaul, Esther. Number two, the brothers also. This is an awesome medrash. I've said a number of shurim on this medrash, but we're not going to go into it. Amru, after the sale, after the brothers sold Joseph, they said, Nacharim beinenu, let us establish a ban of excommunication between us. Shelo yagid echad mimenu liYaakov avinu, that nobody should tell our father Yaakov. We all have to swear we're not going to tell Yaakov. Amar lehem Yehuda, so Yehuda said to them, Ruvain ain't no kan. Ruvain isn't here. And the ban of excommunication needs a minion in order to make it valid. Ma also, what did the brothers do? Shitfu HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'oto achedem. They took God in as a partner into that ban of excommunication. Nine brothers and God. This is such an awesome medrash. If I'm going to go into explaining the medrash, I'll never get out of it. But if you look Parashat Vayeshev a number of years on RabbiShalomGold.com, Shalom, S-H-O-L-O-M. Now there's another Shalom Gold in this city. Don't get me confused with the other one. Some years ago I told him, you're the other Shalom Gold. He's a wonderful fellow. He lives in the old city. He has a yeshiva there. Okay, so you can. I think the shir is entitled the Medrash Tanchuma. Awesome! What the brothers are doing over here is it would seem as though this is a conspiracy of silence. They committed a terrible sin, and you know what they want to do? They want to cover up, and you know who helps them cover up? No less a figure than God Himself. What's going on over here in this medrash? Shitfu laKodesh Baruch Hu, Pa'osav Chedem, Shelo Yagid Laviem. Rabbein Shalom, you're not going to tell anything. Kivin Shiorad Ruvain Balaila lo ta'abor. That night Reuven came back to the pit. La'alotot to take Yosef ad v'lo mitzo, and he didn't find him. Koraz begodav, he rent his garments, uboch, and he cried. Chozer le'echov, he returned to his brothers. Amalehem. Hayelet einenu, he said to them, the child is not there. V'ani on bo, what's going to happen with me? He gidu lo es ha'maise. They told him exactly what had taken place. Ve'et ha'chedem. And they told him about the ban of excommunication. Sha, still. Nobody is to utter a word. And you know what Reuven decided to do? Vishatak. He remained silent. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even the Holy One, blessed be He, Af HaBisha Katubo, even though it says about Him, this is a pasuk that we say in davening every day, Magid Devarav LeYaakov, He tells things to Yaakov, Dover Zelo Higid, He never told Yaakov what the brothers had done, what had happened to Yosef. Mipnei HaChayrim, because of the ban of excommunication. And because everybody remained silent, Lufichah Choma Yaakov, that's why Yaakov said, Torof, Toraf, Yosef. Yosef has been torn apart by a wild animal. Just very, very much in brief, just that I don't leave you with this medrash. I had developed the idea that there are times at which silence is therapeutic. If the brothers would have been able to talk about the sale of Yosef, I imagine what would have happened was they would begin a blame game. Why didn't you stop us? Where were you? I didn't do it. You did it. It would have destroyed and torn apart the family from which Klal Yisrael is to be created, torn them asunder completely. But when there's absolute silence, you know what happens when there's absolute silence? You can begin to think seriously. And it took them 22 years. They're standing in front of this tyrant, dictator, Tzafnat Paneach, also known as Yosef. And he accuses them of being spies. That all of a sudden they say, Avol Hashemim Anachnu, we are guilty. We're guilty for having sold our brother. You know why they were able to come to that recognition? Because they were unable to blame somebody else. The moment you can blame somebody else, you'll never see any guilt in yourself. Why does the Rebbeinu Shalom choose to become part of this unholy alliance? So I said then, whenever there's blame to be handed out, there's always somebody who's going to say, and where was God? The Rebbeinu Shalom knows he's going to get it. And where was God at Auschwitz? The Rebbeinu Shalom knows, you know what? Silence. Silence. In silence, or they will learn. They're going to learn. They're going to be alone with their own conscience, and they're finally going to arrive at the conclusion, we are all guilty. But that's only a very brief explanation of that medrash. So far, I think we've found that silence is golden. Right? Rachel, Binyamin, Yosef, Shaul, Esther, silence is golden. Maybe they were right when they wrote that under my picture. Except they weren't right. I wasn't really so silent. But there's a Gemara. Now we have to learn a Gemara. Gemara Masechta Sota says the following. Amar Rab Chiya Baraba, Amar Rab Simoy, Rab Chiya Baraba said in the name of Rab Simoy, Shloisha Hoyu Ba'ota Eitza. When Paro said, Havonit Chakmalo, let us deal wisely with the Jewish people, lest they rise up against us and leave the land, Paro had three advisors. The three advisors were Bilam, Iyov, and Yitro. Bilam Sheyatz, Bilam who gave the advice, enslave them, crush them. His punishment was Nadrach that he was killed. Eov sheshosak. Eov remained silent. Eov remained silent. He didn't express any opinion. Nidon b'yisurim, he was judged to suffer. He suffered because he remained silent. Huh? Is silence so golden? It's not so golden anymore. Eov, who remained silent, suffered the suffering of Eov. The suffering of Eov. Yitro sheborach, Yitro fled. He knew that there are already two who are in favor of enslaving the Jewish people, Paro and Bilam. Eov remains silent, so whatever he's going to vote will make no difference. The die is cast. There's nothing he can do. So he fled. Zacho, you know what happened to him? Zachu mibnei bonav shiyosh yeshu belishkat hagazit. Great-grandchildren of his sat in the Sanhedrin, in the office in the temple, on the Temple Mount. Shenema, as it says, umishpichot sofrim yoshvei yavetz taritom shematem hemo ha-kenim. The Kenim were from the family of Yitro, habon mechamat avi beit rechov. Anyway, ubnei, and it says, ubnei Keni, the sons of Keni achotein Moshe, the father-in-law of Moshe. That was one of Yitro's names. All of a sudden, things have changed now. Silence is not so golden anymore. Eov suffers terribly. Let's go further. Leman Tzion lo echeshe, uleman Yerushalayim lo eshkot. This is Yeshayahu. For Zion's sake, I will not remain silent. Uleman Yerushalayim, and for the sake of Yerushalayim, I will not be still. Ad yetze ken nogad tzidka, as until the righteousness of Yerushalayim will go out like light. And the salvation of Yerushalayim before the whole world will be like a burning torch. Lo echeshe, I will not remain silent. Silence here is not golden at all. For Yerushalayim's sake, I have to speak out, I have to shout, I have to stand up and be heard. Let's take a look at the next source. This is from Parsha Vayishlach. We know the story. Vateitze Dina bat Leah, Dina, the daughter of Leah, Asher yolda lo Yaakov, that she had given birth to Yaakov. She went out, lit oath, with no tarets. Yaakov and his family have returned to Eretz Yisrael after more than 20 years in the house of Lavan. And they arrive at Shechem. And there she goes out to see the daughters of the earth. Vayaro ta Shechem ben Chamor ha-Chivi in the sea Haaretz. Shechem, the son of Chamor the Chivi, the prince of the land, saw her. Vayikachota, he took her. Vayishkavota, vayanel, he raped her. Vatidbak nafsho b'dino bat Yaakov. But his soul became bound up with Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. Vayehavat ha-naro, he loved the girl. Vayedaber alev hanaro, and speaks to the heart of this girl. Vayomer Shechem al Chamor, Aviv Shechem said to his father Chamor, Lemo, saying, Kach li et hayalda hazot lisha, take this girl for me as a wife. V'Yaakov shama, and Yaakov heard, ki timei Dina bito, that his daughter Dina had been defiled, ubonav hoyu et miknehu basodeh, and his sons were with the sheep, the cattle in the field. V'hecherish Yaakov ad Boam. Hecherish, another word for silence. Hecherish. He remained silent. next source. The Navi Yeshayahu is saying that there's going to come a moment in time where God's wrath is going to rage against the enemies of Israel, and his great compassion for his people is going to come to the fore. He's going to bring them home. Hecheshayti me'olam. Yeshayahu says in the name of God, Hecheshayti me'olam. I always remain silent. Acharish et apak. Here we have two of the classic words in the same pasuk. Hecheshayti me'olam. I was always silent. Acharish. I remained quiet. Et apak. I controlled myself. I saw the suffering of the Jewish people and I controlled myself. But you know what's going to happen now? Kayoleda efa. I'm going to moan like a woman giving birth. Eshom. The Eshof Yachad. He's going to get ready for a mighty roar. And you know what I'm going to do? Acharev harim, I will destroy mountains, ugvot, and hills. V'chol ezbam ovish, and I will dry out all of their grass. It's a metaphor for the leaders, the mountains and the hills are the leaders of the nations of the world who are anti-Semites. There's a bumper crop of them in the world today. What? Chapter 40. Wait a minute. 42? Or 42. Yes, 42. It happens to be a Haftorah also. I don't remember the exact pasuk in 42, but it's there. Ah, yeah. Leman Tzion lo echasheh, 62. All right? V'samti neharot liyim, and I will turn rivers into islands, v'agamim ovish, and ponds I will dry. V'holachti ivrim, and I'm going to lead the blind, klal yisro, b'derech lo yado, on a road that they had not known, b'netivot, in paths unknown to them. Adrichem, will I lead them. Osim machshach ufneim, I will turn the darkness before them. La'or to light, u'ma'akashim, and all the crooked roads are going to be straight. Eila hadvorim asitim v'lo azavtim. These are the things, it says, though I've done it already, I'm going to do it. So here we have two words. Hecheshayti and acharish. What's the difference between hecheshayti and acharish? By the way, there are other words also. For example, the classic word of all, I think, is when Aaron's two sons, Nadav v'Avihu, are struck down on Rosh Chodesh Adar, in Nisan, at the dedication of the Mishkan, it says, Vayidom Aaron, Vayidom. Absolute silence. Let's first of all take a look. What's the difference between Echesheh and Acharish? So there it is, there's a Malbim. I don't know why I didn't write a number there. On the left-hand side of the page, the Malbim. The Malbim is brilliant. Watch. Hecheshayti acharish. Hecheshayti acharish. Chosho mitzayin hashtika hepech hadibur. Chosho, its purpose is to signify silence, the opposite of speaking. You'll see right away what he means. Umacharish, the word macharish, mitzayin hashtika, shehi hepech hatshuva. Macharish represents the idea of remaining silent in place of responding. When Yaakov knows that Dina has been defiled, so it says, vecherish. He should have responded, but he controlled himself. So hachadish is the silence, which is He should have responded. He should have spoken. But he holds back. Lachush, chasha, means silence. The absence of talking. Leman tzion lo echesheh. For Tzion's sake, I will not remain silent. I'm going to speak out. He goes further and take a look at the psukim he brings. Eit lachashot, kohelet, a time to be silent, ve'eit ledaber, and a time to speak out. Lachashot is the opposite of speaking out. Al chomotai Yerushalayim, Yeshayahu says, On your walls, Yerushalayim, hifkadeti shomrim, I appointed guardians, tomid, counsel. Lo yechashu, they will not remain silent. They are going to speak out. Vayachadishu ha'am, v'lo onu oto davar. Here I'm afraid to say that I found a mistake in the Malbim. That pasuk, I'll tell you right away what it means, but it says over there, v'hecherishu, not vayachadishu. This is talking about Rav Shokei. Rav Shokei was the messenger of Sancherev. He comes before Yerushalayim and he tells them, you better surrender. Which God in this whole world has ever been able to stand up against the God of Sancherev? It's all over. All the countries of the world have fallen before Sancherev. And he blasphemes the God of Israel. And the pasuk says, "Vehechadishu ha'am," the people remain silent. "Velo onu oto davar," and it goes on to say, "Because the king had ordered them to remain silent." So do you see what it says? They remained silent and did not answer him. "Lahachadish" means to remain silent when you should answer, just as "Vehechadish Yaakov" remained silent. He should have stormed against the people of Shechem. Poal chosha, the verb chosha, nimtza gam ala zivat hamasa. Chosha can also be used in not doing an act. Atem machashim. I think that's someplace in Malachim. I'm going to take a chance. You know, somebody out there is going to hear me and say, hey, no, girl, that was not right. But I think it's the lepers around the city of Shomron. They see that there's been a great victory. The enemy has fled, and in the city they're starving, and the enemy has left all of their goods, food, drink, everything. And one of them says to the others, "Why are you remaining silent? You should speak out, Atem Machashim." Hepech chish shemora al azvizot. The word chish also means to hurry. To hurry. Chish maher, hurry. That refers to the idea of response. Quickly respond. Umiyin zebo gam al azivat hadibur, and therefore it can also be used about somebody who forsakes speaking when he should speak. Oh, the word chish also talks about a tempest. Vayecheshu galehem. The Navi talks about the waves of the ocean. The sound. All right, that's the... That's really all we have to know. So we know that there's all sorts of silence. There's all sorts of silence. Well, let's turn over and see what more we have there over here. This is the fourth chapter of Megillat Esther. The first line at the top is the last pasuk in chapter 3. The messengers of Achashverosh and Haman Yatsu de Chufim Betvar HaMelech, they went out carrying the word of the king, Vahadat Nitnar B'Shushan, and the law was proclaimed in Shushan Habira. Va'amelech v'Haman yoshu lishtot, and the king and Haman sat down to drink. V'ho'ir Shushan, v'ho'ir Shushan avolcha, and the city of Shushan was in despair. U'Mordechai yodat kol asher nasa. Mordechai knew everything that was happening. Va'yikra Mordechai et begadav ya. Mordechai tore, rent his garments. Va'yilbash sakvev, and he put on sack and ash. Vayetze betoch ha'ir, and he went out in the midst of the city of Shushan. Vayizag za'akor gedolo u'moron, and he cried a great and bitter cry. I remember hearing a shir, being present at a shir of Rav Soloveitchik when he was talking about the Shoah, and we're going to talk, that's going to become the topic of this shir. When he was talking about the Shoah, he says, I blame no one. I can hear it right now. I blame no one. Why didn't I run out into the streets of Boston as Mordechai of old and cry a great and bitter cry? Why did I remain silent? And he came to the gate of the king, because he can't come into the gate of the king wearing sackcloth. Every state, where the word of the king and his new law arrive, Evel Gadol Yehudim, there's great mourning for the Jews, v'tzom u'b'chi u'mispein, fasting and crying and eulogizing, sak ve'efe yutzol rabim, sackcloth and ash spread out for the many. V'atavona, the girls of Esther came, they told her what's going on, what a scene Mordechai is making in the streets of Shushan. V'tischalchal ha'malkom yod, she trembled. V'tishlach begodim l'halbish et Mordechai, she sent clothing in order that Mordechai should get dressed properly. U'l'hasir sako me'alav, and to take off his sackcloth. V'lo kibel, he refused. He's not in. He's going to be walking through the streets of Shushan with his sackcloth on. She sent one of her officers, Hatach, one of the officers of the king, to ask Mordechai, what's this all about? Hatach went out to Mordechai, El Rechovair, to the main plaza of the city, that's right before the gate of the king. Mordechai told him, everything that had happened, that Peroshat HaKesef, and the money, Asherama Haman Lishkol al Ginzi Amelach, the 10,000 shekels of silver that Haman had ordered should be given to the treasury of the king by Yehudim, because about the Jews, Labdom, in order to destroy them. That Patshen Tavadat Asher Netam Lishushal Ashmida, not only, and a copy of the edict, the evil decree, he gave Laharot et Esther to show Esther ulhagidlon, to tell her, watch this, ulitzavot elah, and to command her, lavo al hamelach, to come before the king, litchanein lo, to plead, ulavakesh, and beg, milifonav al amo. Boyavu atach, atach came, he told Esther, batomer Esther, lahatach, vatitzaveu el Mordechai. You should know, a change is taking place. It's the beginning of a great change. The dominant personality of the Megillah has been Mordechai, but it may be that it's all moving to Esther. Watch. Hatach came and he told Esther what Mordechai said. Vatomer Esther laHatach, and Esther said to this officer, Vatitzavehu el Mordechai. She is commanding him to speak to Mordechai. This is, you know, Esther is, in a sense, beginning to attempt to take the reins of the management of this terrible crisis in Jewish history. Call out the Amelach, the Amedinas, Amelach, Yodim, Asher, Kolish, Vishash, Yovel, Amelach, Lachot, Sepidimus. Everybody knows, everybody throughout the realm knows that anybody who comes into the king's inner chamber, Hashalo Yikardei, who has not been called. Achas, one thing, Datol Hamis, has to be put to death, except for the one that the king will extend, Levada Shiyoshet Lo Sharbit Hasav, the golden scepter. And she says, I haven't been called to the king for 30 days. By Yagiru Mordechai is Divrei Esther. And Mordechai, they told Mordechai the words of Esther. By Yom Mordechai Lashiv El Esther. And Mordechai said to respond to Esther, Oh, Tedami bin Afshech, let you not think, Lehimalait Beit HaMelech, that you're going to be rescued because you're in the house of the king. Mikol Yehudim from all the other Jews. Ki im hachareish tacharishi, because if you're going to remain silent, now you know why I learned the whole piece with you? Just to get to this. Ki im hachareish tacharishi, because if you remain silent, if you are going to remain silent, then an easing of the situation and ultimately rescue is going to come from another place. And who knows what's going to happen to you, Esther, and your whole family. The only reason, now we know the reason why you were taken a few years ago to be queen. This is it. This is the great moment of crisis. All right? Vatomer Esther lahashivel Mordechai. Esther said to respond to Mordechai. Here, Esther takes in her hands fully the reins of the management of this great crisis in the history of the Jewish people. No. Mordechai wants her to go into the king and cry out just as he had cried out in the streets of Shushan. Esther says, Parvalia, slow. Take it easy. Tell all of Klal Yisrael to fast 3 days. And even Arotai, I and my girls, we will also fast. And after 3 days of fast, then I'm going to come to the king, though I have not been invited. And whatever will happen, will happen. If they strike me down, I'll be struck down. It's not the male Mordechai blast crying. No. We're going to go step by step. So there are times when silence is golden, and there are times when silence is not golden. It depends on the situation. There is no general rule that silence is golden. What's this all about? What's all about this? One of the great essays of Rav Soloveitchik is the essay called Dodi Dofek, in which he said it in 1955, 1956. It was a response to the Holocaust. And he has one section in there where he talks about Iyov. Iyov remained silent. So the Chof says the following. If silence is golden, what do we want from poor Iyov? Iyov thought that it's all over anyway. He's outvoted 2-1. What does his saying anything will make no difference at all in the world? So there's a beautiful vort that's said in the name of Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, the uncle of the Rav. The way the Rav is going to express it in his powerful, powerful language is really powerful. They say in the name of the Briske Rav, his uncle, you had a right to remain silent. Your speaking out would not have made a difference. But a krechts, not even a krechts, not even an oivei, not even some kind of a feeling of pain, hold silence. For that he's punished. How can you remain cold? Nothing. The Rav says the following. I'm going to take you through a little bit of the... I've got so much to say today. I don't know what's going to be with me. Okay. Rav says the following. He's talking about the reason for suffering. And he arrives at the conclusion, the Jew never asks why. We are never going to be privy to that answer in this world. You can bang on the table, you can cry out to God and ask the why of suffering, why did this happen? There will be no answer. He says the question that the Jew asks is, what am I going to do with that suffering to turn it into a force for spiritual growth? Is the suffering simply going to remain agony and pain, not harnessed and channeled in order to make me and society a better place? Or are we just going to let the suffering be squandered, wasted? The Jew doesn't ask why. He asks, how? How can I grow from this suffering? What will it do for me? How will I become a better person? How will I create a better society? Maybe at the end of time we will know, but now we're certainly not going to know. So the Rav says, as long as Iov was philosophizing and seeking the reason for his suffering, there was no communication from God. Iov, it's a lost cause. You can go through 37 chapters in Iov, and all Iov wants is to know the reason for his suffering. Why did this happen? Why did this happen? Finally, the Rebbe Shem tells him, you're asking me why all of this happened? You want to know the why? I'll ask you, what do you know? What do you know about creation? What do you know about the animals and the fowl? Do you know when they give birth, their pain? Do you know what food they need? God goes through chapter 47, 48, and 49, asking him about all of creation. Do you know? What do you know? And you're asking me? Until it reaches a point that Iov, in fact, says, he realizes that he doesn't know. He realizes that he has no, there's no point in asking God. He says, Lachain hi gadati v'lo ovin. Toward the end of the Sefer, he says, I've been talking and I didn't understand. Nifla'ot mimeni v'lo eda. You are so wondrous from me and I don't know. The moment that Iov says he doesn't know, and he stops all of his philosophizing, at that point, God is ready to deal with him. And the Rav says what it is that God is telling him. Yeah, Iov, you're a most outstanding human being of the East, the wealthiest. You had power, you had influence, you had everything. Yeah, true. You gave charity to the poor, to the almana, to the orphan. But did you ever feel the pain of a fellow human being? Or was it, you know, yeah, sure, you're an upright citizen. God is accusing Iov having been a nice, good citizen, used the wealth that God gave him, but he never truly felt the suffering of a fellow human being. According to the Gemara, there are different opinions. When did Yov live? Did he live in the days of Yaakov? Did he live in the days of Moshe? Did he live in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah? And the Rav says, Yaakov was being pursued by Lavan, by Esav, by some mysterious men at a riverbank. Did you speak up for the suffering of this world, of a Yaakov Avinu? You were there in Mitzrayim. You were a member of the cabinet of Paro. Did you speak up on behalf of the suffering of an entire people? A whole people are suffering. What happened? Did you do anything? 42,000 Jews come back to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash. They're surrounded by enemies from without and enemies from within. And you are the most influential person in the East. Did you say a word? Did you open up your mouth? What did you do for them? Don't you understand that tefillah, prayer, is in the plural? All of Shemona Esrei is in the plural. Rifa'enu, heal us. Did you understand what it means to pray truly for somebody else? At the beginning of Yov, it says that there would be a party every day at another one of his children. And then after seven or eight parties were over, Yov would make a party. And he would bring sacrifices for all his children, that in case, God forbid, they had sinned, they should be forgiven. Did you bring a sacrifice for anybody else? And what did you say for anybody? For your children, yeah. Eov, I would say the Rav describes him as being self-centered. And what he has to learn is there's a world out there. And there's evil in the world. And there's suffering in the world. And a man who has a relationship with God. Remember, what does it say at the beginning of Eov? Eov is Ish Tam V'Yoshar. He's a good and a fool. Yireya, he's a God-fearing man. He's a good man. But you remain silent. And you know what ultimately his tshuva is going to be? There it is. At the very end of the Sefer. One pasuk. V'Hashem shav et shvus Iyov behit palalo ba'adreyehu. God returned everything to Iyov behit palalo ba'adreyehu when he prayed for his friends. When he truly demonstrated that he cares about somebody else aside from himself. Pope Pius XII remained absolutely silent during the course of the Second World War. And not because he hadn't been asked, begged. The British government pleaded. The American government pleaded. Speak out for heaven's sake. Condemn Hitler. You can bring millions of Catholics throughout all of Europe to rise up against him. Speak out, for heaven's sake. He remained silent. You read, there are two books that I've reread in the last few days. It's unbelievable. First is this book, Hitler's Pope, by John Cornwell. John Cornwell was commissioned to write a book in preparation for the sainthood of Pope Pius XII. He's a Catholic and he's going to write what a great pope Pope Pius XII was. And they opened up some of their archives to him, which they now promise they will open at the end of the year. And it seems that as he reads and he finds before himself a completely different picture, that the man was an anti-Semite. The man was an anti-Semite. What everybody was waiting for, the Christmas Eve broadcast of December 24th, 1942, beginning around the end of May and beginning of June of 1942. Report after report came from the occupied Europe that there's a massacre going on. The numbers started growing and growing. The Polish government in exile already said that 1 million Jews have been killed. And they don't know what's going on in other countries. There were new reports coming in July, in August. There was the famous Rigner telegram that came from Switzerland that there are factories, death factories, all across Europe. So the pressure was building up. I mean, to write it, read it all you need. I can't. But anyway, all ears and eyes were waiting for the Christmas broadcast. The Christmas broadcast of the Pope was an hour-long talk about rights and love and God. All platitudes, nonsense, nothing. There was one sentence. And this is the one sentence that the Pope claimed this was his great epistle against Hitler and the death of the Jews. I'll read the sentence. Then came the famous statement intended, as he later claimed, to be understood as a clear denunciation of the Nazi extermination of the Jewish people. Quote, humanity owes this vow to those hundreds of thousands. Watch, he has already diminished it from millions to hundreds of thousands. Again, humanity owes this vow to those hundreds of thousands who, without any fault of their own, sometimes only by reason of their nationality or race. He doesn't mention religion, right? Some who, without any fault of their own, sometimes only by reason of their nationality or race, are marked down for death or gradual extinction. Do I need anything better than Mussolini? Mussolini, his comment on the Pope's Christmas message was. Perhaps the most fitting commentary on the address was the contemptuous dismissal of it by Mussolini. Count Ciano came upon the Duce listening to the broadcast on Christmas Eve. The vicar of God, who is representative on earth of the rule of the universe, Mussolini scoffed, should never speak. He should remain in the clouds. This is a speech of platitudes which might better be made by the parish priest of Pridapio. Pridapio was Mussolini's backwater native village. It was a grade D drasha by a little priest. Two words he refused to utter during the entire war. Never Jews and never Nazis. That's silence. That's deafening, deafening silence. The other book, The Deputy. Deputy was written by Rolf Hochhuth. It's a play. And this Rolf Hochhuth, I think, was published at the beginning of the 60s or middle 60s, a condemnation of the Pope. It hit the world and it's the silence of the Pope. There's a young priest by the name of Ricardo. Ricardo is pleading with the Pope to speak out against Hitler. And scene, act four, is mad. Act four begins with the Pope concerned about the some of the stocks and bonds that are being held by the Vatican that, you know, may drop in value. We have to do something about it. Oh, this is very, 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 very serious. And he's worried about the factories and the industry of Italy. He'll talk about anything and everything. He's also, he is so involved with the idea of the ascension of Mary, that Mary had been taken heaven. He's living in every world except the real world. And then the dramatic moment comes when Ricardo, the young priest, pulls out a yellow Star of David and sticks it onto his hassock, his papal robes. And the Pope, no, not that. Get that off. Get it out of here. That's the kind of silence. He can speak when he wants to speak, and he can talk platitudes. He was a disaster, and they want to make him into a saint. So the Ebich the Rapiden. By the way, it wouldn't be bad. That's most probably what a lot of the saints were anyway. Doesn't make any difference. I have just one more. I should have scheduled 2 hours for this year. Following the Second World War, the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, Reb Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, visits Europe. He's on his way to meet the survivors. And he asks for and is received by the Pope. And of all things, they went out of their way. They permitted the chief rabbi to come on a Sunday. You know, never on Sunday. But for the chief rabbi, they're on Sunday. Rav Herzog's mission was, they knew that there were thousands of Jewish children that were placed in Christian homes, in monasteries, all sorts of Christian institutions. Rav Herzog wanted the Pope to issue an edict saying all Jewish children have to be returned to the Jewish people. To say it in a word, the Pope never issued such an edict. He was cold. All that we know about the meeting is that they started speaking in English. From English, they moved to French. And the last part of their conversation took place in Latin. Rav Herzog spoke 11 languages fluently and wrote and read them. But here, this is the clincher. When Rav Herzog comes out and meets with his people who had accompanied him, his face was ashen white. And he told his associates, I was looking in the face of pure evil. I have to go to a mikveh now. And they took him immediately to a mikveh so that he should be able to cleanse himself for having stood in the presence of Pope Pius XII. Silence is golden. Oh no. Eis ledaber. There's a time to speak. And yes, there is a time to remain silent. But the choice of Pope Pius XII was completely wrong. Because he was a son of Israel. I don't know. The Americans and the British thought that they could have millions of Catholics across Europe who would in a sense slow down the German war effort, maybe even rise in rebellion. Nothing of that sort was going to be, because he was the Hitler's Pope. And the fact is that Shmuley Boteach, in his article last week, referred to the Pope as Hitler's Pope. And there was a letter to the editor of the Jerusalem Post, you know, a little bit indignant why he referred to him as the Hitler's Pope, because the poor fellow who wrote the letter didn't know that there's a book entitled Hitler's Pope. Shmuley Boteach didn't make it up. So, all right, so we've learned, Eis Ledaber Ve'et Lishtok, there's a time to speak and a time to remain silent. Esther knows precisely when the time to remain silent. Esther, she doesn't tell what her background is. That should not be known until the moment comes. But then, when there's a time to speak up, and there are two kinds of speaking up, one is Mordechai's and one is Esther's. One is the crying out in the street. That's not going to work. Esther is going to manage the situation in her own unique way, and she ultimately becomes Moshiach Shel Yisrael, the savior of the Jewish people.